You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. This, of course, is the podcast where you can get your Orioles news and information from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. Here at Locked On Orioles, it's all O's all the time. I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a lifelong Orioles fan, and I'm also a veteran baseball journalist. I spent 3 years as Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I've voted on Cy Young and Rookie of the Year in the past. And I have another podcast. It's called Baseball by the Book. You should check that out as well. Guys, the other day I saw a tweet from Mark Viviano of WJZ, and it's one of the most depressing things I've ever seen. He points out that entering the season, Buck Showalter was 53 games over 500 in his 8-plus seasons as Orioles manager. And now, because of the disaster that has been this season, he's going to fall below 500 as Orioles manager and might be significantly below 500 by the time the season ends. I don't think one season will ruin his legacy, but it is going to ruin the way his record looks in the record books. Anyway, that got me thinking about Buck and the Orioles' managerial future, and we're going to talk about that today with Matt Taylor of Roar from 34. We're going to look at Buck's legacy as Orioles manager, and we're going to speculate about who might replace him if 2018 is indeed his last year at the helm. We'll get to that interview in just a second. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined again now by Matt Taylor from Roar from 34. And Matt, the reason I brought you on is I wanted to talk about the Orioles managerial situation. I think anybody listening to this podcast knows Buck Showalter's contract is up at the end of 2018. The Orioles have made no indication at this point that they are planning to re-sign him after the season. They've made no indication they're not planning to resign him either, because the front office is not very transparent, as we all know. So we honestly don't have any idea what they have in mind for Buck at this point. But I think it's a safe bet that he's going to be gone after this year. It's the first thing I wanted to ask you, as somebody I know, you're somebody who's very up on Orioles history. Let's just talk about Buck Showalter. If this is the end for him, let's talk a little bit about his legacy as the Orioles manager. Where do you think what do you think his legacy is, and where do you think he ranks among Orioles all-time managers?
You know, that's a really great question, and kind of a fun question that I'd almost want to dive deeper into with writing something about. But I think off the top of my head, I mean, certainly, you know, Earl Weaver is the standard in Baltimore. And for Buck, I mean, I think he occupies a significant place in Orioles history in many different ways. And I think, you know, if he is gone after this season, I think that the upside to that is that while this season would be ending on a sour note overall, it wouldn't be just adding more losing to that overall record and being kind of deceptive on how well he did. I think he certainly would have to be up there toward the top of the list. Not at that Earl Weaver level, certainly, but I think he would be high up there. And I think that, you know, as we move into this period, you know, with this season and moving forward of lots of losing and all that comes with that, it is important to remember the success that was there and how that was built. And I think Buck was certainly a big part of that. Obviously not solely responsible, but he's done a lot of great things during that time. And I think that he'll be remembered well within Orioles history when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think, I agree with that. I think I was looking it up, he's second all time, I think, in wins among Orioles managers, obviously, to Earl Weaver's first. I think he's, you know, was something like seventh or sixth or seventh in terms of winning percentage. But that obviously some of the guys ahead of him had very short Orioles careers, such as, you know, Davey Johnson, who was only there for 2 years. And you know, three postseason appearances for the Orioles. You know, we know that two of those were wild card appearances, second wild card appearances. But, you know, in both cases, they were actually tied for the wild card lead with the other team. So I think we're going to count those. Other managers, you know, earlier managers didn't have the second wild card, but still, given what the Orioles had gone through before he got there, making postseason three times in 5 years is a pretty impressive accomplishment, I think. And I think, you know, if you look at the numbers, arguably he is the second best manager in Orioles history. I think the only other guy I think has a really good argument for it is Hank Bauer. of course, the guy who led them to the 1966 World Series title and had quite a bit of success other than that, led them to a bunch of 90-win type seasons and in contention several years before that. So to me, those are the two that are in the mix to be the second guy to Weaver, because obviously Earl is so far ahead of everybody else that it's just a competition for second at this point.
Well, and I think, you know, part of my interest with history is I enjoy the context of it. And I think that, you know, as you look at Buck's tenure overall, it's important to consider the broad context, including how bad was this team for so long, who was here when this was happening. And then I think also what's really important is to not let individual events overshadow, you know, an overall career. And I think, you know, one of the big things that's hung on Buck is, you know, obviously the bullpen decision in 2016 with the wild card game and what happened in Toronto and not using Zach Britton. And there's certainly a lot that comes out of that. But at the same time, you have the context of, you look at that 2012 team and just how outstanding that bullpen was, in many ways carrying that team, that was, you know, kind of a sum of parts team overall. And you think that the manager plays some role in that and being able to use a bullpen and not overutilize a bullpen to the point of burnout. So I think really getting that larger context. And I think, you know, you mentioned kind of the shorter term managers like a Davey Johnson, who had a fantastic time here, but very brief. With Buck, we have a long context and have seen what he's done. And I think it's always important to consider the full context, beyond an individual decision and even beyond just, you know, postseason appearances.
So if it is the end for Buck Showalter, that means, of course, that the Orioles are going to have to decide on a new manager come this offseason. The caveat there, of course, is that they may also be deciding on a new general manager. Dan Duquette's contract is up. We don't know what his future holds with the club as well. As I've mentioned this podcast so many times, there's so many moving parts with the Orioles that it's hard to really talk about some of these issues, because we don't know exactly who's making the decisions, right? We don't know who's going to be deciding on the next manager, whether it's going to be Dan Duquette or somebody else. And so that, of course, factors into what we're going to talk about next. But with that caveat, let's just talk about what we think might happen here in Baltimore if the Orioles decide to move on from Buck Showalter in 2019 and beyond. John Heyman has written a couple of different things over the last couple months speculating about the next Orioles manager. The most recent one, I don't know if you saw this, was apparently the Orioles have some interest. I don't know if they've actually talked to him or not, but there's some interest in Mark DeRosa, the former player who works at MLB Network now. Did you see that report?
I didn't see that, no.
What do you – I mean, obviously that's something that's maybe pure speculation at this point. We don't know what the interest level really is, but – how does that strike you at first glance? Is that the kind of move you think they should be making, or no?
Well, yeah, I guess as a starting point for, you know, what I think the move they should be making, you know, for me, there's a start of moves they shouldn't be making. And there haven't been, from what I've seen, as many recent reports, but earlier on, I think even when there was some question about, you know, would Buck be here the rest of the season, even, you heard names of, you know, former Orioles greats kind of thrown about. And that's the one thing I probably have the strongest reaction to, of let's not go down that path. And that's not a knock necessarily against any of those individuals and their baseball acumen, but that just feels like kind of a move that speaks more to that dark ages of losing rather than going forward. So I think just using that kind of as a baseline, having a fresh name from outside the organization, I think there'd be a lot of value in that. I think one of the things that it's a unique spot in the sense that coming in, you know, it's a tough job, and that's not just because of, you know, all the history there of what ownership might do or anything else, but just looking at it strictly from the fact that you're coming into a job where you know you're not going to be winning, that this is a building process. This is a process of working with young players, fitting into a larger organizational vision, we hope. So that I think makes it a unique circumstance. And so you have to have someone that's really willing to accept that. And I think be looking at player development, working with young players, teaching them the way to play the game. And there's a lot that goes to that. So, you know, I don't know that I have a strong reaction one way or the other to DeRosa's name specifically, other than to say that you're getting someone from outside the organization. I wouldn't necessarily be against that. I think that there could be a value to that with fresh eyes. I think as long as the only danger that I see with something like that, when you look at some other managerial hires, and one that comes to mind for me, you know, with the Nationals, how they've bounced around trying to find the right guy. and had Matt Williams there, and there was this benefit to a former player, but you see a sort of clash between maybe a traditional role of this is how the game's supposed to be played versus the game has changed and is changing, and can we adapt to that? So that would be the only thing when I hear names of former players, or you know, how do they feel about kind of the current state of baseball? How open are they to input? Not only from folks that they're working with that presumably have histories in baseball themselves, but what about as the Orioles presumably beef up their analytics, how open are they going to be to having that discussion and adapting if necessary? So that would be the big question for me with any former player is kind of how set in their ways are there. You certainly want them to have a vision and idea of how the game's to be played, but you also I would think want them to be open to the fact that the game's changed a lot and you need to be able to adapt to that moving forward.
Yeah, and you mentioned former Orioles players mentioned, being mentioned in this context. Heyman himself had reported back in June, I think he reported on Mike Bordick, Bill Ripken, Rick Dempsey, and some of those names. So I think that's what you're talking about. I think that's the kind of thing that, as fans, we probably do want to avoid. That's not necessarily the direction you want to be adding in. Now, I know that after Heyman reported this, our friends at Camden Depot tweeted out some thoughts on it. And I guess John Shepherd there must have gone and talked to somebody he knows in the organization about this. And the guy, I think if you read his tweets, go to Camden Depot's tweets from Tuesday and you'll see this. He talks about some names that popped up, not that necessarily any of these are in stone, but just names that were speculated about. And one of them you mentioned, an analytically oriented type manager. And one of the names that came up that I thought was pretty interesting was Brian Bannister, who is former pitcher for the Mets and Royals, who now works as, I think he's the assistant pitching coach for the Red Sox right now. I was reading up on him a little bit, and he's apparently a guy who is pretty sabermetrically inclined, analytically inclined. And maybe that would be a kind of a good move. Somebody like that who's been with an organization like the Red Sox has those kind of thoughts, has worked with pitchers, maybe something like that would make sense. And I kind of hope they do go in a direction, whether it's Bannister or somebody like that. It would be interesting to see them go that direction and not just go with a retread like a Joe Girardi or a Brad Ausmus, who are some of the other names John Shepherd tweeted out.
Sure. And John's well-connected and I think certainly would have a good ear to that sort of thing. When it comes to a guy like Bannister, I think that, obviously, depending what happens with Dan Duquette, the big word for me that always comes up is the vision and what's going to be the vision for the organization. But certainly the manager will presumably play a role in setting that vision. And so when you're talking about young players and talking about, looking at a rebuild over a number of years, for that to be successful, there has to be a vision. And to have someone that is, sabermetrically inclined, you would think that they have a vision for the type of player that they want, and the type of players they want to be acquiring, the type of players they want to be developing. And I think a sincerity to that. And the reason I say that is obviously sabermetrics goes much deeper than something like on base percentage. But we've heard for the past how many years about the need to get more on base percentage guys with the Orioles. And it hasn't happened. So it's been almost kind of lip service to, we understand the importance of that, but not actually doing it. So I think sincerely having an organizational belief and vision and a manager who goes with that and can define these are the type of players that we're going for and having a rationale to that is important. So I would certainly find a name like that encouraging in the sense that it does reflect what they've talked about in terms of more attention to analytics and also to some vision for how are we going to do this rebuild and do it in a way that that is meaningful across the organization and not just kind of taking shots here and there piecemeal and hoping it works and ending up with a team that maybe contends for a second wild card.
Right. So yeah, and just to mention some of the other names that John tweeted out, Brian Roberts was one of them. Speculation there being that he is a favorite of ownership. He's a guy who obviously is a great Oriole player and has a pedigree. His father was a successful college baseball coach at North Carolina and South Carolina. So there was some speculation about that. The other names that came up, like I said, Joe Girardi, who's been out of work, Brad Ausmus, former Tigers manager, who's been out of work, as well as Earl Hershiser, the the pitching great and pitching coach, who works. I think he's working for ESPN in some capacity now, or has been. I don't even know exactly where he works right now, to be honest. So those are some of the names that came up. I'm personally not enthusiastic about a retread, like a guy like Girardi a guy like Ausmus, who I think was not particularly good at managing. Girardi, I think, was a better manager, but he is apparently very intense and not necessarily a guy who listens to what other people have to say very much. And I don't know that he wants to put himself in a situation that the Orioles are going to be in over the next few years where winning is not going to be on the table for a few years. And that brings up another issue. And I think it's an important one to consider as we talk about this. And that is, what is the role of this next manager? Is this a guy they're looking to long-term, or is this more of a caretaker who they kind of absorb the losing until they bring a full-time type manager in? You know, because we know that the Astros, for instance, Bo Porter was there for a lot of that really bad losing for the Astros. And by the time they start winning again, he's gone. Somebody else is getting the benefits of it. Rick Renteria with the Cubs, same way. You know, he's let go and Joe Maddon's brought in to reap the benefits of the losing and the building of the farm system and all that stuff. So I guess that's another question is, do we realistically expect the next Orioles manager to be the next successful Orioles manager? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I mentioned earlier being a tough job, that's what I would really think of. You know, a lot of discussion around names and you know, who might get the job. There has to be that question, who would want it, knowing that that's kind of the setup, that they may well be the person that, like you say, absorbs the losing and then someone else comes in and takes the glory, which is, you know, somewhat funny considering that, you know, that's almost been Buck Showalter's role, you know, career-wise in terms of Arizona and the Yankees and getting the team to a certain point and then someone comes in and gets all the glory. But, you know, I think that's an important question, certainly for coming in, that, you know, they're certainly going to be thinking about that. And I don't think you can make any promises, obviously, but having that vision of, is this person going to be the caretaker or is this possibly going to be someone? I would think any of these guys are probably confident enough to say, well, you know, I'm going to prove my worth and I am going to be that guy that stays here. But you know, the last round of names you threw out, really, you know, I don't have a favorite in this, and there aren't particular names where I'm thinking go in this direction, but here's some of those. And it just kind of, I do have an instinctual reaction of, no, that's not the way to go. And I do think you want somebody that you want to be looking and saying, okay, this is going to be the person that's going to bring us to that point, that's going to see us across the finish line and be here when we're winning. And I would want you to hire anyone with that in mind. But I think that more likely is probably that you are looking at a situation of someone that has got a really big job in front of them that's going to develop this and may not see the end result of it, other than to know that they played a part of it, but weren't the ones to get the glory in the end.
So it does seem likely to me that the next manager is going to be somebody who absorbs a lot of losing and is then the sacrificial lamb before they bring in the next guy. I hope it doesn't work out that way, but it seems like that's a lot of times the way it does work for a lot of the teams who go into rebuilding mode. But even so, I do think it's important to bring in a guy, like you said. You don't plan for that guy to fail. You bring in the guy that you want to be the next guy and the guy who's going to help incorporate the ideas you want to incorporate, whether it be on base percentage or you know, defense, whatever they want to emphasize as an organization over the next 5, you know, to 6 years. The next guy should be somebody who can teach those things and buys into those things, whether you think he's going to be here for the success or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, you're looking really at an organizational commitment overall, that I think things have to be working in concert. I mean, that seems like a fairly, you know, obvious observation, but these guys that are the future of the organization are going to be coming through your minor league system, whether they're currently there or future acquisitions. And so to really have a mindset led by that guy at the major league level in the dugout of, this is what we're doing and we're going to teach this, you know, from the minor leagues on through and value this on through. And, you know, I think in Buck's early years, you know, if you look at the spring training coverage, it certainly seemed like that spring training really was a teaching opportunity, even for young guys that, you know, you knew weren't going to be with the club that season, or maybe even the following season, of teaching them, hey, this is how we do things here. And I think getting a continuity throughout the organization, and that's where you get into, I think there's a personality side to it of, you know, you're going to want someone that can work with young guys, but also, you know, probably a certain strong sense of, I don't know if you call it character or will or whatever, that is really going to take that and not be someone coming in and allowing themselves to be perceived as, okay, this is the interim guy and he's going to be gone soon, but someone that's saying, hey, I have a vision and I expect that this is going to filter through the organization. And that obviously goes back to the question of, you know, whoever's in that role next in that Duquette seat, of the buy-in they have there. I mean, we had this dynamic that's kind of played out, and whether it's as big as sometimes imagined or less than it is publicized, of, you know, Duquette versus Showalter and there being some infighting there during their time with the organization. I think really getting folks that, yeah, you're going to have disagreements. You know, this is a professional organization and that's going to happen, but not getting into some kind of power struggle where people are going in different directions, but really having a shared vision that is shared between general manager, whatever the title may be, with a manager, presumably that they have a say in that hire that buys into it. They can then filter through, you know, the minor leagues and really be looking at this is a path and this is the direction we're going. So I do think you need that quality of someone that's going to work with guys and have that patience, but also a strong enough personality. So, you know, there's not a perception, whether it be, you know, among, you know, others in the organization or even players themselves, that, you know, this is just a person that's kind of passing through and, you know, the real person is coming later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I think we're going to know soon enough what their decision is. The season really is almost over. It's going to be, you know, not too long before we're at the end of September and the season's ending, and the Orioles at that point are going to have to make that decision and let us know what that decision is. So we'll know soon enough. And whatever decision they make, I think is going to be, it's going to tell us a lot about what the future of this rebuild is going to look like. It's going to tell you a lot about the organizational philosophy and whether they're really seriously committed to it or not. And so that it's going to be interesting for a lot of reasons. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today. If people want to find you, you're at roarfrom34.com, correct?
Yes, and I'm on Twitter at roarfrom34 as well.
All right, people should check you out there. Matt, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.